You're listening to The Doorcast, found on every major podcast streaming service, especially Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. The Doorcast is written and produced by your host and yours truly, Liam Dorr, and is recorded in the heart of Manhattan. And welcome back to The Doorcast. Today we have a very special guest. He daylights as a real estate mogul, but in his free time is a bit of a world traveler. Went cross-country three times to Baja, California. Last year ventured deep into the Yucatan Peninsula. And then most recently returned from, if I'm not mistaken, a trip to Sardinia. Today's guest is Alex Veza. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Liam, what's going on, my man?
Am I correct that it was Sardinia or Sardinia?
Yeah, it's the Americans say Sardinia. But in the Italians, they got that GN, Sardegna.
Okay.
That's how they say it. So Sardegna.
And were you visiting family over there? Or?
We have some family friends. The story is really crazy. They're like family, but they're not blood related. But when I was like, I guess I was probably 7 months old, someone overheard us speak English on our last day there. And it turns out, it was the daughter of an American citizen who left Newark, New Jersey when she was 17, met an Italian doctor, and she's been in Naples and Sardinia her whole life, and they had never ran into somebody from New Jersey, Sardinia. And there it was almost 35 years later, and they bumped into us, and we've just developed an amazing friendship. And I don't remember it because I was, you know, in diapers, but, you know, my parents created this relationship with them. So it's become very special.
Well, first off, one, who would ever want to leave Newark, New Jersey? Especially on, to go to Italy, like of all places.
Yeah.
Like,
and she grew up in Italy. She grew up in a foster home, and I actually got to go see it, but she met an Italian doctor, and she was studying Italian at the time, and she just never went back. And but you know what's funny, man, they Italians, and I guess everyone around the world, they love American culture. You know, we think it's so shitty, but they love it. And she, of course, was asking us about Newark. How is it? So just crazy to see how people, think about, you know, when I mentioned New Jersey, I'm from New Jersey, they big wow, like, oh, amazing. And it's, you know, you don't get that here in Manhattan. So different perspective.
No, I completely get that. When I was in Florence abroad back in college, people would talk to me about American things that we Americans talk about as like liking or not liking, very polarizing issues. Like people would say to me like, American President Trump, and you'd be waiting for them to say like, I love him or I hate him. And they'd just be like, yeah, they're just saying basically, hey, I know what's going on. I'm in the mood here.
Yeah, of course. I know. It's almost cause like some of them don't, you know, they haven't formed an opinion because it doesn't maybe matter to them. Like some of them it does, but yeah, they just know these things and they want to, you know, I mean, if you've ever seen the shirts they wear, like I saw one in the airport that said, I mean, granted it was Balenciaga, but it said like, it did send nudes. It was a handbag and it said send nudes. And the guy didn't speak English. I tested him and said something to him and he spoke Dutch, but I just was amazed that was, you know, a fashion statement that he didn't even bother translating, or maybe he did and he thought that was like a saying that we said, you know, something that's kind of, popular.
That is a saying that Americans say. I mean, generally it's a younger demographic of Americans, like high schoolers and college kids, but that's a pretty famous saying these days, which says a lot about our culture, but to have that on a shirt or on a handbag rather, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I guess, you know, I may have missed that boat a little bit. I feel like I was always two steps behind the, you know, like I went to Italy, I'm single, and I said, maybe I should download like Tinder to meet somebody. And my buddies in Italy were like, no, no one goes on Tinder. What are you doing?
No.
And of course, it's like, so I'm a little behind on some of that stuff. But I guess send nudes is a pickup line, maybe. Or no, it's not. It's definitely not.
I mean, it depends on how it's said. If it's said as like a joke, it's like a funny thing. Like if you send it to your boys, like obviously they're not going to send you nudes. But then like there's also like a connotation. Like it depends on who you send it to and what your relationship with the person is.
But would you say that to, do you think?
I wouldn't say that to anybody.
Like, You wouldn't say it to anybody. Okay.
But I might say it to my friends. I might say it to like my guy friends.
Gotcha. Gotcha. But was it you? Do you think it was used in the context of someone's DMing and they're maybe drunk late at night and they're like, I can't come over. You know, it's too far. I live in Brooklyn. You're in wherever. And the guy's just like, ah, man. You know, send nudes.
And I know. I think in this situation, it's a guy in an airport not knowing what his what his clothing says. Right. I wish there were a deeper meaning, but I really don't. I mean, we see this all the time. I'm pretty sure Ariana Grande thought she was getting something tattooed on herself in, I believe, Japanese.
Oh, no, no,
and
no,
and
no,
it
no.
ended up saying something like barbecue. Yeah, we actually see that's and that's like a big thing, though, because different cultures see different languages and see like the symbols and the characters of it and think it's really cool, but there's such cultural translations that people mistake the things that they think they're putting. So like half the time when I'm dating my girlfriend's Croatian, and half the time she's speaking Serbo-Croatian, and I ask her like, what did you just say? She's like, it's too hard to even translate. Because it just there are things that just don't translate well from one language to the next.
Totally. I was just gonna say, I mean, I read a thing on Airbnb trying to brand, you know, open up in China, and Airbnb translates to something like stay in my house and never leave or something like something really intrusive. And they spent months coming up with a new Chinese or Mandarin, I should say, a new Mandarin term. And it's, I guess now Airbnb, if you translate it, it's like live and be happy, and that's their branding there. That's their brand name, I should say. So really, I'm always amazed how cultures would, you know, like Columbus would land in North or in the Caribbean, I guess, and how they would even start to communicate with each other. Like there's no translator, and how that even starts, you know. That's always fascinated me.
So it's actually, there's a really, really funny and really famous translation issue that happened with Carter during the Carter administration. And in 77, he goes to Poland. And at that time, I believe Poland was still communist. And he was trying to say, I left the US this morning. But he actually said, I left the US and will never return. And then whatever he was trying to say, he said he will be happy to grasp the, he desires Poland carnally. So he essentially got up there not knowing what he was saying because, you know, obviously he doesn't speak Polish and gets on a stage and goes, I left the United States. I'm never going back. And I want you.
In social media, this would have moved markets if this was like, you know, this is modern day. That is what an awful.
Imagine the field day that BuzzFeed would have with that.
Yeah. Oh my God. What a high stakes job. Imagine sitting, you know, doing the Kim Jong-un, Trump, you know, summit. And, or I should really say the Putin, Biden. That's a little more high stakes, I think. But who knows? Yeah, that's. It's really cool though. You know, one of my goals, I've traveled a lot and I still haven't really mastered Spanish or Italian. Although I have a really good working knowledge and I get by and often I find myself as the main speaker when I'm with a group of friends. But there's really something special about speaking another language and making jokes and understanding jokes and the connection you have. Because the little bit of experience I've had, it's really special. You almost feel like you have like a superpower. So I really admire all the people that speak two languages or five languages if you grow up in Europe.
Yeah, that's
like our family friend who's like a little cousin to me. I mean, he's grew up in Germany. He's Italian, grew up in Germany, speaks Italian, German, studies French now, just got fluent in Spanish, and then obviously knows English because that's just, everyone just knows English. So. And he's thinking of Russian, to learn Russian. So it's really, really impressive. It's something that I think I've noticed, at least in Europe, or I should say Germany, just from my experience with our family friends, the way they teach language, they must have a more advanced way to teach languages because these kids really pick them up. And, you know, here we go, I went from K to 12 with Spanish class, and you know, you could barely order food at a restaurant or ask for the check. It's like, it's embarrassing.
Well, I'd say that's probably twofold. The first is that they get taught it a lot younger, but also they have actual experience using it. Cause you know, Europe is pretty, you know, compared to America, Europe's pretty small.
Yeah.
And so you have these Italians going to Germany for the afternoon, or you have these Brits spending a weekend in Spain. That would be the equivalent of me in New Jersey going to Virginia for the weekend, or
Myrtle
someone
Beach.
From Texas going like to the other side of Texas.
Texas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I got West Texas stories for you. That's
we can dive into country. Those. So, what inspires someone to go cross country to Baja California three times in their life? After the first or second time, weren't you like, maybe I should go north, maybe I should go to the Black Hills, things like that? Or totally. Why stay in Baja California three times?
Yeah, so one thing about my travels, which are different than my sister, to give you a little background, my mom traveled a lot when she was young. My dad had never left the country until he was in his 40s. So when he met my mother and they married late, it was my dad's eyes were really opened up. And as when we were, you know, young, he really encouraged us to travel because he said, you know, he was a little, his parents were a little, they instilled a lot of fear in him about traveling. And, you know, some of it was good, obviously. You don't want to get killed traveling, but you do want to explore. So my sister took that to another level. She ended up studying abroad, like most people do, but then living in Italy and being a tour guide through Europe for almost 3 years. And then mine's a little different because my sister's been all over the world, like almost every continent, and I guess every continent except for Antarctica, I think would be the, oh no, she hasn't done Australia. But anyway, so my travels had more, I've gone to the same places a lot, and that's where I've developed some really, really good friendships. And, you know, I think the next part of my life, I'd like to explore different places, but there's that sense of habit of going to the same place, that you're comfortable going to the same place. I had a friend who had gone to Baja a lot himself they wanted to stay for an extended period of time, but they needed a car. And they kind of threw it out as a joke, like, oh, maybe you drive the truck to Mexico. And he and I were 18, and we looked at each other, and I had just moved home from college. I sophomore year, I came to live at home, was going to county college, and I thought, I got nothing else going on. What the hell? And so we got in the truck and mapped out our plan, and we went cross country, but it was not the most, it was very enjoyable, but it was, I was totally out of my element. And, there was a part of me that, it's when I learned that sometimes the journey, it's like a kind of a cliche thing, but the journey is really the experience, not the destination. And,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so that was really just, you know, doing a favor for my friend's family. And, I had nothing else going on. I was kind of like, I thought, you know, I didn't tell my dad this at the time, but I was, you know, he kind of knew this. I came home from college, didn't do well my freshman year, was really lost. And I kind of felt like, you know what, I don't care if something happens to me. Like, I just need to go and change it up. And so it was kind of a reckless, it almost was a reckless abandon, but I think it was a calling there. So that was an interesting first trip. Neither of us, like I said, my Spanish was not that great. So we were, you know, that was a huge variable. And, you know, I'll get into it. We got into some hairy situations that, you know, I think are worth telling some interesting, you know, there was a gas strike down in Mexico when we were there. And it was awful. We found ourselves in a small village on the first day we were there. And basically Pemex, the national gas company, the Mexican government decided, you know what, we want to open up competition in Mexico for other gas companies to come in. So Exxon was going to come in, Dutch, you know, Shell was going to come in. And that month leading up to it, Pemex jacked their prices up. And so our second day in Baja, we had camped the first night. And second day we're driving, and then no traffic ever on these two lane, roads, dirt roads basically. And we slam on our brakes and there's a huge line of traffic. And we get out of our car, walk probably 30 cars and trucks ahead of us, and there's just a huge stone roadblock of it was a roadblock, and basically we translated with them, and they wanted money to pay for the gas, that the price of gas going up, and we said we had nothing to do with it, and it turned into a 4-hour ordeal, we really, we thought we were gonna get taken as like hostages or something. We had no clue. So that was a first day in Mexico.
Well, that really sets off a vacation on a good foot. Did you end up having to pay them?
Oh yeah, we probably, once we encountered those roadblocks four times. So the first time we spent about an hour trying to translate with them until we realized, they just need money for gas. Like, they just can't afford the new gas prices, and they have no other way of signaling to the world that they're unhappy. So they blocked the road, and it's only one, there's really only two or three roads going down Baja to get from basically Tijuana, which is a border crossing, US border crossing, or there's Mexicali, or we had gone through, actually we went through Mexicali that first year, but the safest one is Tecate, like the beer. That town is really, really cute, but there's only a couple ways. So if supplies are coming in on ground, they're going through these towns. And so we ended up paying them, right? And then we drive 2 hours, maybe next town, another roadblock. And we had just realized, okay, just pay them off. It's like a toll, and for us, maybe 50 pesos was nothing,
Sure.
So we did that. And then by the third or fourth town we got to, they were not having it, and they did not want a toll. They wanted everyone to just stop. And we ended up circumventing their toll and going through the back end of their town and driving on the beach. And then, like fucking Mad Max, we literally turn around a couple minutes later, and there are guys on motorcycles chasing us down the beach. And we just kicked it. And we had another gentleman on a motorcycle that was following us, because he realized that we kind of had an idea of what was going on. And we get to this big puddle, and the motorcycle can't go through the puddle, and we had to go through the puddle. And the poor guy, it was like a fucking movie. You turn around, and he's just, he was just like left for dead with these motorcycle guys going by. And, it's, if you're going down on a motorcycle by yourself, you gotta really be careful. We were lucky to be in a truck. So,
That's like, crazy. It's scary and a bummer that you had to wait and pay for that. But it's also, if you think about it, really sad that the only way to show like we're unhappy, we need things to change, is to I guess gouge and hold roads for ransom.
Oh,
it's kind of heartbreaking if you think about it.
Oh, of course. And they basically said, we can't go to work, we can't work on our farms. Gas went up something like I think like five times or something, like something really ridiculous, that they just couldn't get it. They couldn't use their cars. So it's not like they could drive to the capital of Baja, which is La Paz, or that's Southern California's capital. I forget what Northern Baja's capital is. Lobby their local representatives. They, that was their only way. It was really, really sad. And we ended up giving more money than they were even asking for. And, it was one of those things where you realized how helpless they were. They were basically subject of this monopoly that their reign was coming to an end. And, just awful to see a national company like that price gouge their own citizens. And they just gave it right back to them. And when I tell you, it was really messing up supply chains in Cabo. That's when it hit. That's when the Mexican government, did something about it. Because of course, once American tourists couldn't get, what they needed, it was a wake up call. The whole thing down there is about American tourism, and we'll get into that. But you see it with the way the cartels work. that, you know, they, you could, you're, if you're an American citizen, you could do whatever drugs you want. You could buy whatever drugs. They're just happy that you're an American down there spending money. And the police will almost, you know, protect you and allow you to do drug deals and all that. And, but if you're a Mexican citizen and you want to have a little bit of fun, you'll be held to the, you know, the highest standard. And it's where I learned the term, the ugly Americans, where we kind of just go down and, you know, eat all we can and drink like crazy. And the people down there, you know, it's just a totally different experience for them.
And so you had clearly so much fun on this trip being chased down by biker gangs and having to pay tariffs on gas that you said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to go back not once, but twice.
Yeah. 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 So the second time it was like, we didn't need to bring the truck the second time, like the truck was already down there. But we decided, you know, I forget how that went down. I think we just wanted to go again. And you know what, that time we realized, wow, we really need to see the country. And that's my one piece of advice. Like, if you can't leave the country and you know, airfare is really expensive, and I think it's only going to keep getting expensive as more people, you know, get comfortable traveling again. The U.S. is massive, and you can be in a tropical climate. You know, you can be, I've never been to Big Sur, but that looks like parts of Italy to me. California is like, you know, looks like Italy as well. And then Texas is a whole nother animal. You know, that's where the second time we said, let's really, you know, check out the country. And we had, I guess we were still underage. So that was also interesting, is going through these cities, not being able to drink and still having a really good time. Not that we were big partiers, but, you know, so we were able to stop, do the Nashville stop. That was a cool city. Memphis. And then Texas, and that second year, actually the third year is a funny Texas story. I'm trying to think what happened that second year, if we got into anything. That second year was the year that we decided, hey, we need to really take our time going down the Baja, and not just be, because the first year we were petrified, and we just wanted to get down to Cabo where we were sort of safe. And this second time we decided, let's really camp and see what's going on. And we just met the most incredible Canadians, most of them retired, you know, well into their 60s or even 70s. And they're from British Columbia, and they, Vancouver, and they in the winter, that's their spot, man. They go down to Baja and they get away from that Canadian winter. And we spent like 4 days offline camping. And my buddy's a world-class fisherman. So we were doing the whole kind of living off the land, and, that was good until, you know, 4 days is enough. It's, we're not actual homesteaders. So, that was pretty magical. And then of course, as we, you know, were posting about it, everyone wanted to come, but it's the more people you have on a road trip, the less, you know, there's more opinions. There's more, you know, that's one thing I would say is, you know, find a really good buddy, or two, three is a really good number. You know, everyone can have a little bit of different, you know, I was always the most like conservative or safest one. You know, I probably had the most fear instilled in me from my father. And that was actually, that saved us a lot of times, but there were times that my buddy's pushing us really. So you want to have like a dynamic group like that.
You want to, yeah, you want to have that one guy who pushes you guys to do things you don't want to do, yeah, which will end up being fun.
Exactly. And one guy in the middle, the one guy we brought the second year was new, and he was like, listen, whatever you guys think. And the two of us around him would, you know, we would kind of go back and forth and say, no, we shouldn't do that. Oh, we should. And, that's one thing. And I will say, like, it's super safe. You just want to not, like, the rules of driving in Baja, or you don't drive at night. And it's not even because of the cartels or anything like that. It's because of the cattle. The cattle are, will cross the road in the middle of the night, you know, herds of cattle. And if you're driving at night and you're going 60, 70 miles an hour, you will not be able to see that far ahead of you. And, you know, that first night we were there, the first year, we found ourselves driving at night. We broke the two biggest rules, like, don't drive at night. Don't drive at night, and know where your destination is that night. And both times that first night we passed our destination, and then that's when we were really confused and we're like, oh no, I think we got to keep going. Missed it. And then we were like, oh no, now we really don't have a plan. And then we find ourselves driving at night, and probably an hour into driving at night, we almost totaled the truck, slamming on our brakes on a cow. And then we had to wait 20 minutes. We had to wait 20 minutes for the whole herd to cross. It was just a weird, it was a really intense night, and, talk about adrenaline levels. So that was a tough one. And the thing being in the desert is, yeah, man, you got to be careful of water, and gas. You can't, anyone that drives across from Las Vegas to LA, there's a stretch where I think it's like 100 miles before a gas station, and you better fill up and make sure you have water, or it can happen.
Oh, that's all right. Everybody from LA going to Vegas probably has a Tesla anyway, so
they're good, And eventually, if Tesla gets, I'm sure they thought about it, getting solar panels on the top of the car, like you could just drive and charge, be incredible. So yeah, those are some things. There's a lot of those little rules that, you can find them on Reddit and stuff, but if you have somebody that's done it, that's something. And now one thing I also learned with the desert is in mainland Mexico, and it may have changed in the past 2 years because of the whole, when El Chapo got killed, like there was definitely a vacuum of a power vacuum where everyone was, these cartels were competing for power. But in the desert, it's actually more friendly than you would think. Because if you're a bad guy out there, it can come back to bite you because you're out in the desert, and so there's almost like a good karma out there that it is during the daytime, it feels pretty safe. And then it's a ton of just hippies from California, that are driving down. And so, you start to get the sense that, oh, this is a little different than. But I guess my first story about the Mad Max, gas strikes kind of makes it seem like it was crazy. But these are just like very, very sweet people that farm down there. They were not mean at all. They just had no other way to send a message that they were hurting from the gas prices going up.
Well, I feel like our impression of Mexico, our impression of most of South America actually is pretty skewed based on like the things we consume. It's not, it's not healthy. It's not healthy that our immediate perception, and this doesn't go for just Mexico. It doesn't go for just South America. There are so many places now in the world that from a two-part series or something we see on some streaming service, our entire mentality about an entire country, entire culture, entire continent is completely skewed in the wrong direction.
Oh, totally.
It's pretty messed up.
I didn't want to go on the trip because all I thought of was gangs. I just thought Mexico desert gangs. And that was is pretty crazy. And, I guess it's somewhere in the middle. Maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle where it's a lot of these small towns do have cartels that kind of are the people in power. The local police are pretty helpless, but the actual people there are sweet as ever, and they want all the same things that we do. And they work hard, and they're trying to make their family happy, and definitely. And you don't, maybe as an, and that's why I was saying as an American, like once I learned that, the cartels don't want to kill an American. Because that's when the U.S. State Department gets involved, and that's the last thing they want. And that's at least in the touristy areas.
Sure.
Like that because that will kill. Cancun. I've been to, like you were mentioning, Yucatan Peninsula. Been to Cancun a lot, and they recently, maybe in the past 4 years, have had some Americans killed down there, and it really hurt tourism. Everyone said, "Oh shoot, Cancun is kind of dangerous. We should not be going down there." And when those hotels see less bookings, They coordinate, you know, these local governments coordinate with the cartels and say, stay away from the Americans. You're hurting business. They're not going to buy your drugs. They're not going to. So it is weird being an American traveling around where.
Wait. Where was that place, I think 2 years ago, that all these Americans started getting poisoned? Do you remember that was like a big breaking story where the travel was hurting like crazy because Americans just kept getting poisoned by like hotel staff? I think I'm gonna have
that's awful.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would not be surprised because, you know, I've gotten really sick. I mean, this isn't, no, I don't know that story, but, I wouldn't be surprised because, you know, all it takes is, I get why you know, countries look at America and are angry or jealous. And, you know, that's all it takes is them to go into a club one night, poison the ice, poison the water for the night. And, you know, I mean, I know like at Mandalay, I think it's Mandalay or Mandala. I forget what that club's name is. It's in Cabo and it's in Mexico. They had 2 weekends in a row where the cartel came and, you know, shot it up. And, it was a big deal. And, yeah, I mean, I've been lucky. I've had a lot of stomach issues when I'm in Mexico from the water and all that, but thankfully I don't think it was poisoning, but you know, we take a lot of things for granted, man. The tap water, like the fact that we can drink from the tap is an amazing, amazing thing.
It was Punta Cana, by the way.
Oh geez.
Yeah, so I was actually, this was my junior year of college going into senior year, and this was the summer prior, and our spring break planned for the next year was Punta Cana.
Oh my God.
So the group chat's going crazy. We actually booked it through a service.
Okay.
And so this service was like, hey, we're kind of scrambling here. We're going to find you guys a new location. Well, the first thing they did was actually, they were like, look, you know, Americans are getting poisoned and killed, but like, you know, your trip's in 6 months and trust us, you'll be safe, which is the least reassuring thing you could possibly say. Like, listen, it's in half a year. Just trust us. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then they finally were like, yeah, I think we're going to change it to like the Bahamas or something like that.
Oh.
But, we'll let you know like a month before your trip. And obviously COVID happened, so we didn't end up doing anything. I think by the end, we had whittled it down to just going to Miami for a few nights.
Yeah. Well, that's what's amazing about the U.S. is, yeah, you don't want to leave the country. I mean, that's like my dad. Like I told you, my dad's not the biggest traveler, but he's done it and he's open to it. But he's like, just go to Miami if you want. You know, it's great weather. You're in the U.S. You have U.S. hospitals.
You can get a lot of different cultural experiences that feel like you're in other countries in the U.S. And people don't give the U.S. enough credit in terms of travel. Like, they think immediately Times Square in New York City. But you go to Miami, you go to SoCal, things like that. You're getting a lot of rich culture. Or, like, you go to if you want to experience some of the best German, best Nordic culture – you go to the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah. If you want to meet Italians, New Jersey.
Go to New Jersey. Go to Essex County.
Go to Rutherford, New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, yeah. I mean, listen, I'm maybe because I'm working in Jersey, I'm a little bit biased. I love Jersey, but I just think it's because you do get all this mix. And yeah, the U.S. doesn't get enough credit. And
no, we don't.
If you're not traveling and you wish you were, and it's a funds issue, you know, I would say drive across the country, get in a car. Like, you know, I'm yet to do, like I said, Northern, like Pacific Northwest. I mean, the redwoods, man, like all those forests.
People go missing there.
Yeah. There's some scare. Yeah. There's definitely some, I want to watch the documentary on, the town that does, that grows like the most pot in the country. It's I forget what it is, but yeah, it gets a little weird over there. But
you ever see Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, so
that was filmed
Endor.
Endor is the redwoods.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the fact that that's in the U.S. is incredible. I mean, you can go visit a fucking Star Wars.
Oh, like, and in the beginning of that movie, when they do the whole Jabba's Palace back to Tatooine thing, they didn't want to spend the money to go back to, I want to say they went to Tunisia, but they didn't want to spend the money. So they actually went to Death Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. I mean, actually, I will say driving through Death Valley, although you could say it's boring, it's hundreds of miles and it's just nothing, to actually be in a desert like that is pretty amazing, where you don't realize that there's these parts in the US that are sitting there. They're there all the time. The sun goes up and down every day and it's sitting there, and it's just, it's otherworldly. That's how I felt about, you know, driving through Death Valley. And the same thing with West Texas. Like, you know, I'm yet to do Austin or those cities, but I've done like Sacramento, and we almost went on a big hunt in West Texas. So we drove to a really small town in Texas, and it was, unfortunately, we had a compound bow issue where my buddy's compound bow broke and there was no bow dealers, so we had to call off the hunt and whole thing. But just driving through Texas, I mean, it's a big country.
I think there's this crazy graph that's been released online where it shows the amount of places you could go to from any point in Texas in America or Mexico or South America,
mm-hmm.
that would be closer than going from the furthest tip of Texas to the other tip. And it gets to like Ohio or something like that. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, West Texas, I think, took us 8 hours to drive through from, I forget what part, but we spent a whole day just driving out of it. And we've done that 3 times. My only regret with the cross-country driving is we've done really the same route all 3 times. And, you know, I'd like to do the northern route. I've never been to Chicago. I mean, I feel like I've done a good amount of Europe, and I want to do more Central America, but I have this like incredible desire to go to Chicago. I mean, I just would love to see another major. I mean, we have major cities in this country.
Yeah.
And so I like Chicago. Next summer, it's on my list.
Chicago's a sweet city. It's
yeah.
You know, it gets a bad rap because of, you know, you think of like Shameless or whatever, and it gives a bad rap to Chicago. But like, I really enjoyed Chicago. You know, I wouldn't live there just because I'm a coastal person. I need to be somewhere near a beach.
Yep.
But it was a nice city. Maybe
not a winter city.
Not a winter city, and then maybe I'd catch like a game there, stay there for like a few days. But it's not like New York where I could spend like a week in it and not get tired. I'm actually moving to New York next month.
Incredible.
Yeah, but
you must be so excited.
You have no idea. But yeah, I mean, Chicago is the same with a lot of like those Midwest cities. What I will say is for the lack of like stuff, because we are so stuff centric on the coasts. Like we have all that we have, you know, on the West Coast, we have Hollywood, we have all these San Francisco, things like that. In New York, we have basically every bit of advertising in the world. What these Midwestern mm-hmm. like cities, Rapid City, Sioux Falls, things like that, lack in the grandeur of like stuff, it really does make up for in people. The Midwest gets a bad mm-hmm. rap. I guess because people say like, oh, they're like removed from everything, or like they're out of touch. It's like, no, people in the Midwest are smart because they don't get into these little fights that people on the coast do. And I really respect them for it. They don't get into our stupid, unnecessary drama. You'll never meet someone nicer in the United States than if you pass like Ohio and don't get to California.
Oh, I got the same feeling in Oklahoma and Arkansas. You know, not much going on in those two states, but the people were incredibly warm and welcoming. And it does bother me sometimes when I hear coastal residents say, "Oh, they have no clue what's going on," and it's like, you know, they have their own world. And the thing is, maybe we should try to understand them a little bit better.
They know what's going on, and they actively choose to not get involved over mm-hmm. over our bullshit, which is really hard to do because we're raised to just, especially in the East Coast, get into every single fight you can.
Yeah, it's like
if someone says something nasty to you on the internet, fire back. Someone's mean to you in real life, fight them. And people in the Midwest are like, nope, not gonna happen. Not getting involved.
Yeah, not gonna tear up my community. I mean, that's one thing I love about what I'm doing in real estate is I'm really getting to know like my community. And, you know, that's one thing that maybe and I don't know, because I've never lived in the Midwest, so I don't want to, you know, project this on them or make an assumption. They have a sense of community. And so maybe they don't want to get into these fights because they think, yeah, it's not worth, you know, creating enemies with my neighbors. They're still part of my community and they have different opinions, but we're all still going to, you know, we're going to get along. And maybe it connects to kind of what I was saying about the desert, where you don't really want to make enemies because you don't, there's not a lot of people there. Yeah. And if you need something, you don't want to, in New York, it's like there's 7 million people, you know, you can be an asshole because you'll go to another, you'll find another restaurant, you'll find another diner to go to. Or
for every
whatever.
One person you cut off, you can replace them with 10. It's
yeah. And that's fine. That's maybe that's great for dating, where you feel like, okay, I don't, you know, it's nice. You don't have to, you know, see your ex-girlfriend or something, or be in the same friend group. You can like find a new group of friends. But for community, for us to understand each other and you know, have healthy discourse and disagreement, you want to be face to face with your neighbor and think about, oh, I'll see them in the supermarket. I better not be a total asshole.
Yeah. I'll tell you one story there. We were going out to Howard, South Dakota. That's where my grandfather was raised. So Howard's a tiny little town out in South Dakota. We wanted to take him out for like a last like trip, little pilgrimage back to his homeland before he got too old. And it was really nice. But the one thing that kept kind of eating at him was that there was nobody he knew still there. Everybody had either died or moved on. And so we walk into this pharmacy, and the funny thing about the pharmacy out there, from what I remember at least, is it was a pharmacy, but it was also like, it felt like it was, have you ever seen
Black Mirrors? I'll tell you, I'm really bad with series and movies. Okay. And when you said you're in film, I was like, I have no, it's really bad.
No. So the pharmacy out there is like, it's stuck in the 1980s. It was crazy. It was actually kind of cute. Like, you ever see this TikTok? I don't know if you're on TikTok, but you ever see those TikToks where it's like, this just gives me 80s vibes, and shows like a picture of a mall.
Yeah.
It shows like an 80s house, things like that. So it's stuck in the 80s. We go up to this lady and we're like, hey, do you know anybody in town who would have been raised here back in the 50s or the 40s? And she's like, well, not personally, but you can check over there. And she points to like the town coffee shop and the hardware store. And our first thought is hardware store. And we walk in the hardware store, and my grandfather's name is Perry. And the guy behind the counter, John, he looks up and he just goes, Perry.
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
And the thing is, my grandfather hadn't been back since his wedding, or since, you know, the weeks after his wedding, which was in the 50s or 60s.
Oh my.
So goodness. This guy, who was actually 2 years older than him, still remembered him. They actually still had his division titles at the football field in Howard.
Yeah.
From like the class of 54.
Yeah. That's special, man. That's there's something about like they cherish history, and even though it's small peanuts compared to world history and all that, it's their history.
It is.
And if you made an impact on the community in whatever way, and it's just remembering people too. I mean, that's like, it does go to something I always thought about living in New York versus, I mean, I'm in Jersey City, but it's like, we're the fifth borough of New York, like quality versus quantity. And I'm sure in these small towns, it's not a big quantity of friends but you get to know people really intimately, and you remember their names, you know, it's
50 years later too.
And, yeah.
And someone who's not even, someone insane. Who's not even in your class, like someone who's 2 years younger than you.
That's so special. That's incredible. Now, what about your grand, where is your grandmother from? South Dakota?
No, she's actually from Brooklyn. Yeah. So a crazy story. He came out to Brooklyn after his football career ended. He got like a knee injury.
Was he doing like, was he?
He was going the NFL route.
Oh, no shit.
I mean, yeah, he was on track for it. As he busted his knee, so he moved out to Brooklyn to run like recreation programs. And one of my aunts was like in the program and said to him, like, hey, I have a sister your age. Do you want to come home for dinner? And was like,
boom. Let's lock it up.
50 years later, lock it down.
Incredible.
It's pretty interesting to just go out there, because it kind of is like, you know, people, the big thing these days is going to space. But if you want a experience that's otherworldly, just go anywhere 50 miles from your home. Or maybe not 50, totally. Maybe 100.
Well, what about, I mean, this is the thing about New Jersey that I've always, and honestly, the East Coast, we have colonial history that I love. We have gorgeous beaches. You can drive the East Coast and be in a tropical area. Although New York's like almost tropical. And I think like it's, I saw some article that it could be soon just based on our temps, our average winter temps. But, you know, New Jersey, what do you go? 2.5 hours and you're in Amish country is like 3, I think, or 2.5 hours, but you could be in Lancaster. So, you know, so quick. And it's a whole nother world there. And PA is massive. And I did 1 year in school outside of Philadelphia. And, you know, even there, I could tell it was a different, I thought everyone was way more down to earth. And I felt like my first year of college, I was in that set, that New York, like kind of clicky, like you try to like kind of make fight, you know, big fights, you know, all that bullshit. And the people there I thought were so nice. And I still have a lot of great friends from, you know, Collegeville, PA. And I just have like the best memories of them. And they were just the sweetest people. And that was PA. And then I have some great Maryland friends that I've met. And that's a whole nother world. I mean, they really are into their fish and game down there.
Oh, they love their Old Bay, man.
They do. They love it.
I went to college there for a semester. Oh my God, they love their Old Bay.
They love, and the crab, the crab, what do they call it? I went down once to visit a friend, and he was like, oh, you came on a great weekend. Like, we're doing a big, you know, crab, what do they call it? Crab fest. Not a crab fest.
Crab boil?
Crab boil, thank you.
Yeah, crab boil.
And I felt like I was in another fucking country. Like, I felt so out of place, but it was amazing. And
but
it was
not
only,
a bad,
you know,
out of place. That's the best part of
it. No, not at all. I mean, I speak English, so that was the best part. You know, when you travel Europe and you're like, I don't speak Dutch or I don't speak German, you know, it's hard sometimes. There, you're like, you know, looking back on it, I'm like, oh, thank God I was speaking the same language. Yeah, it was pretty special, but Maryland's great. And then even Virginia, I mean, I've never really explored DC, and DC looks very interesting. Just to go in the spring or something.
I think DC as an adult is probably more exciting than DC as like a young kid. Cause I went to DC a lot as a kid. I don't think I really appreciated it enough, just because aside from the Air and Space Museum and the Natural History Museum, and I don't mean this to diminish the 300 years of our American culture, it can be boring. DC can be a pretty boring, you know, you hear National Mall and you think, oh shit, Auntie Anne's Pretzels and Macy's, but no, it's buildings. And that was a big shocking revelation for me when I was in like second grade, that the National Mall is not actually a mall. That was such a
mall. Yeah.
Dude, I really
thought
that.
I was so let down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's wild. I went with my parents when I was in third grade. I just went with my mom when I was in third grade, and it was the week that they had cicadas. So it was, I guess it was 17 years ago or something. And because this year is, I guess, the cicada year, and in New Jersey, they didn't really pop up. Too much development here. But yeah, I was bummed about the National Mall, but it did spark something in me about like U.S. history. And I guess it's kind of hard to go to D.C. and really enjoy it if you're not a huge history buff or like, because then, you know, it's, you know, that's kind of what that's, I think, is the big draw. I don't know. Maybe there's great rooftop bars or something. I don't know. I've never been. So I find myself applying like the New York City framework to other cities. And that's not a great way to do it because you'll be let down or you're just not going to appreciate these cities for what they are.
Yeah, no, that's a big thing. Like people, you know, I have some friends who are from New York. And I actually asked one because she's going to London, and it was such a great answer. It was such a great response from her because, you know, in my mind, I would have been like, yeah, I'll just look at the city and be like, this ain't New York. But she was like, well, she said to me, like, I can't even answer that question because if I do, I'm going to be applying my New York standards to a foreign country's capital city.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't do that because everybody there was raised different. The culture's different. And you know, obviously she wasn't chastising me for saying like, are you going to be comparing it to New York? But she said, basically the number one thing you can't do when you're entering a new city, when you're meeting a new culture is apply any of the standards you were raised with. And I don't mean standards like, you know, living standards. I mean like expectations. Yeah. I mean backgrounds, things like that. And she said, you just can't do that because if you do that, you're going to lose a lot of the experience. And that actually was something I had done for the first few months abroad in Italy. I kept comparing it to things in America. And that actually, until I'd say mid-October. I was there from late August to December to like mid-October-ish. I had kept applying my American standard to every single place I'd gone. So these beautiful buildings in Munich, or I guess late October. So I think it was Munich or Florence or things like that. I kept comparing it to my own life, my own cities. And it's not healthy because you lose so much in that process, but you don't really know any better. Unless you have somebody actively tell you, like, listen, you can't treat this like it's a day trip to New York.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I found myself this year, a couple days, I guess on Monday, I was in Amsterdam for the day. And I, for the first time, I think I really was able to, I've never read the book Power of Now.
Wait, this past Monday?
I just got back from Italy.
casually dropped that you were in Amsterdam on Monday, this past Monday,
but it's
right?
It's fresh. I'm waking up and it's just super casual, but it's so fresh that like, I am really happy that I was able to, I think for the first time, be very, be present and not think of other cities or, I mean, I was comparing, but not the type of comparing where you're not really just taking it in. And I was able to take it in, I think. And then now I'm kind of processing it. But I feel like my senses were on that day instead of like thinking about the future or the past. And, you know, maybe it's because I saw that Giannis quote where he was like, you know, if you're living in the past, or if you got to stay focused in the now. And, I just remember walking around that city and just taking it in, not having any expectations, not trying to compare it at the time. And then now I have like really clear memory of it. And, now I'm kind of comparing it a little bit. And, were you in Florence or were you in Rome?
I was in Florence, yeah. And it's actually funny you mentioned Amsterdam, because when I actually went to Amsterdam, this was we did this thing called the Northern Loop. And so we went from Prague.
You went to Brussels?
We did go to Brussels. We went to Prague, and then I actually got sick in Prague. But amoxicillin is really...
Prague's great, though.
Amoxicillin is really easy to get over there. I was like good within a few days. So we did Prague, then we went to Berlin. And then from Berlin to Amsterdam, or to Brussels, to Amsterdam, to Paris, and then back to Florence. And what I'll say is I got to Amsterdam and everybody was really excited for that one thing Amsterdam's really famous for. I didn't really get into that, you know, back then. I still don't, just a personal preference, but you know, they bought their shrooms and they were like, all right, we're going to go back to our hotel room and do this. I was like, okay, cool. I'm not going to
That wasn't even on my radar. I was thinking of either pot or prostitution.
No, but, no shrooms. Yeah. Oh, and I was like, I'm not going to be that guy who sits there sober with you guys, because that'll just be weird for me. It'll also be really weird for you guys. So I'm just going to go for a stroll through the city. And strolling through Amsterdam, just walking aimlessly. I walked through the red light district, the blue light district, across every bridge that I saw. I stopped at every little bakery that I found. It was amazing. And I didn't understand anything. I didn't know what any place was. And that was the best part. And I came back with such an appreciation for the city. And I hadn't done anything. I hadn't gone on any crazy rides. I hadn't gone to any museums. But just going for a little stroll through a new city, best feeling
of the world. And maybe alone. So one thing is like, I know I'm an extrovert, but I really cherish alone time. And I found myself in Amsterdam alone. And, you know, it would have been more fun with some friends. But one thing I've learned when I travel, when I'm with friends, and I'm not a big runner. I never liked running. I like biking. I like, you know, doing that stuff. I actually found if I threw on some sneakers and took a run and listened to some music, I would get my alone time and I'd get a little bit of time to explore on my own. Yeah. And it's really, there's something special about that. So I totally connect with that. I was alone in Amsterdam for a day and, I took it all in. And I think halfway through the day, I said, you know what? No more headphones, no more music. I'm just going to listen to the sound of the city. And it was special. It was definitely a different experience that, you know, I hope to travel with somebody in the future, but then also find that hour that I could maybe just go out alone. And I would encourage people, you know, if you're with a group, do the group stuff. You know, don't be a loner. Don't be and I was always kind of the loner sometimes where I would like want to do my own thing. But do find some time to get a little bit of that, because then it will just, it's good. It's a good contract, you know, it's a good change of pace. So,
and it's, you know, just walking or running through a city. I actually, after Amsterdam, I didn't do it in Paris just because we were only in Paris a few days and there was a lot to get done, but I got back to Florence and I tried every day to go for a walk through the city. And the best part was walking at night. Because, yeah, you know, you think like, oh, it's kind of unsafe, like foreign city. The thing about Italy, though, is that arguably I think I'm bigger than the majority of the guys there.
You're pretty broad-shouldered guy. You know, you're pretty tall.
And that was never like, because also one of my housemates was 6'4 and muscular. So we never really had a problem, except for the last night, which I can get into off the podcast. Because there might be a warrant out for my arrest in Florence.
Oh, boy.
But just walking through the city at night, walking by the water, looking at the shops as they start to close, things like that. That's what travel should be. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's really cool to see the Mona Lisa. It's really cool to see the Da Vinci Museum, things like that, where the Renaissance happened. Go to Rome, and pretty sure Jesus was in Rome at one point, right? Go to Rome and like see where all this history and culture for thousands of years happened, whatnot. But just walking through the streets of a city by yourself and watching shops close, watching people interact, and knowing full well that you may be the person who's like in charge of your own life, but there are billions of other people around you who have their own lives, who have their own experiences. It's such an amazing feeling. You should feel kind of, you're supposed to feel scared almost, like how small and infinitesimal I am, but it feels good. It's such an odd feeling.
It's kind of what people describe when they do, you know, psychedelics or whatever, and they feel like they're connected to the human, either the earth, or they're connected to the human, you know, race, I guess. And they, you know, you could do that without that stuff and just be conscious of it and remember that shop owner closing and them putting their key in and closing it and going. And I have a couple memories of that, actually, that I think of them somewhat, like, you know, you'll just randomly think of them and say, oh, they're there, they're opening up, they're worrying about stocking those shelves. And, you know, it makes you realize how small you are, but yet you are in control of your own, you know, your own destiny in some ways. And it's such a weird balance that you're small, but yet you feel like, you know what, I'm the one moving my 2 feet and I'm gonna take myself to the next city, or I'm gonna make my plane on time and get home and do what I do at home. And that's super important to me. It doesn't matter to anyone else in this city, but it's a big deal for me to get home on time and go to my job. So yeah, feeling connected and those are, I think that's one thing that travel does. Some people leave and maybe they leave a city and they feel like, oh, I wanna disconnect from my home. But in some ways, you connect with a new city and I think you just connect a little bit better with the whole world. And but you could do that all over the US. That's the other thing. I don't want it to be just on Europe. Like, you got the whole US and it's relatively safe in most of the US. And you know, it's, you know, they take all major credit cards and there's good hospitals. That's the other thing with hospitals. I've had some issues. You know, I've had a couple of traumatic experiences with a family member in Mexico with the hospital system. And, you know, there is that thing when you're in another country that if something goes wrong, you do want to know that there's, you know, good hospitals around, or just American hospitals.
Yeah.
So that's something, you know, to give a thumbs up to the U.S. for. We do a good job at that.
And I will say those European ambulance noises. Those European, I don't
do you
know
like if it?
They, no, they make them extra annoying. Like, don't get me wrong, American ambulances are annoying, like the wee-woo thing.
But theirs is like another level.
There's no pattern to it. It's just different noises all thrown onto a sound bite. And then it's like, I hope that someone listening to this podcast skips to this exact moment where it's just you and I making ambulance noises. Yeah, that's
no, it is intense, actually. It's one of the how they came up with that. Maybe they said just whatever gets people's attention and move the hell out of the way. Yeah. You know, like, beat it.
There were two
definitely
things.
Driving there in Europe is another animal too.
Oh yeah, there were two things that kept me up at night in Florence. Well, three things. The first was that noise. The second, and I'm not kidding, were the bum races. And the bum races were these homeless guys in the streets just decided it would be really fun to do 50 meter dashes or 100 meter dashes. So they'd start at the end of a street and then just race each other. There was no prize. There was nothing like,
no, it's just
you won from
pure
it. It was just like, hey, I'm homeless. You're homeless. Do you want to race down the street to see who's fastest?
Yeah. It's just natural competitiveness. Yeah. Like,
and then the third thing that kept me awake was right outside our door, because we were on a corner building, was a restaurant, and the restaurant was called, and I'm not kidding here, 1950 American Diner.
Wow.
And the neon would literally, I don't know how.
Oh, no.
And it was so unbelievable that of all people, I got the one where the American Diner's neon lights shined through our Italian, through our, like, what are they called? What are those doors that, like, open and close? Window doors? What's that?
Oh, I know what you mean. Wait, yeah. You're saying the ones that it's a window that opens up and then you can actually open it a different way and walk through it, like those?
No, I'm talking about, like, the... You know the windows that have
French doors?
Open the window and then there's those two wooden things that you can push out that are like they cover the window.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so
I don't know the name though.
The neon lights shine through those windows to the American Diner. And it was so poignant for me because it was kind of like sad because I had such culture shock. I was so homesick. I actually went down there on one of the first days and I look on the back of the menu and it gave us an explanation as to what the American Diner was because, you know, it's Italy. So I wouldn't expect every Italian to know American Diner.
What's a diner?
And it literally said, what is an American Diner? And the writing said, after World War II, many Americans had died and every American was very sad. So they made diners to make Americans happy again.
No, yeah. That's not even. I mean, maybe that's so ridiculous.
That's absolutely it. There's no other explanation. I feel like that's why diners exist these days.
Oh my God,
they're right.
It is, the diner is an amazing, amazing thing. That's, you know, we don't know what U.S. our culture is, but we have our own little things, and it's cool to be able to get any type of food. You know, you can get anything at a diner at any hour, and they're all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
It's really nice to
Before we started recording, I went to a diner, picked up lunch. I got a Cuban panini, but then also a gyro or hero. Depends on who's listening. Gyro. At an American diner. You can't do that anywhere else.
No, amazing. Can't be. And you could have got pasta. Yeah, you could have got some pasta.
I could have got matzo ball soup. I could have gotten, it's pretty crazy.
And maybe taco, you know, some kind of a quesadilla.
All right, so we're getting towards the end, but to wrap up, I want you to rattle off the top three places you want every listener of this right now to go to in the next 5 years and why.
I would say definitely do Mexico. I mean, Mexico... And if I'm specific, you know, I would say like where I like to go, San Jose del Cabo. It's Mexico's an easy one, just because it's North America. It's comfortable. It's an easy trip. Number two would definitely probably be somewhere. I would throw somewhere in the U.S. Like maybe number two would probably be L.A. If you're from New York. You've never done LA, like it's really a different animal, and it's a sprawling city, and the vibe is totally different than New York. So definitely go cross coast like that, cross country.
So Mexico. Wait, you said LA?
I'm saying LA just because I've done LA a bunch. And
I'm sorry,
LA.
Just have to strike this up. No, I think I like California. I think California has Ojai, has SoCal, has Northern California. You know, where was the place you were talking about earlier? Big Sur. But I think the number one thing detracting from California right now being one of the best states in America is LA.
Wow. Okay. Well, then I have not really explored enough of California. But then let's just say California in general.
Yeah, there you go. Because we associate California with just LA.
I've done San Francisco for a day, right? So I've done Lake Tahoe for a week. That was, I mean, Tahoe's like Tahoe's incredible. But I would just say California because it's a huge state and the vibe is totally different. And, you know, if New York's the best city, you know, LA or California, Southern California is the best lifestyle. So that's, you know, it's not the best city, but it's definitely the best lifestyle in the country. And then third, you know, it's tough because I haven't explored a lot. I haven't done UK or Spain or any of that, but I would definitely say do the Italy trip, you know, just because of food. I mean, I will just say, like, do it for the food. Go and eat, and it's life-changing, like, that kind of food. It almost ruins Italian food for when you come home, but it's on another level with food, and you would never think eating a small amount of food would be so satisfying. But it really is. So I would throw that in there. And it could be anywhere in Italy, but you know, I would throw Sardinia in there. It's where the Italians all vacation. It's pretty otherworldly. And, you know, you can get there once you're there, it's not too expensive, but, you know, that's an incredible spot, but all around Rome, Florence, or even Northern Italy is incredible. So those are my three, you know, just from my experience. I wish it was more diverse, but
Italy is just what I know. You're fine. Italy is just the perfect country. You have beautiful people, amazing food, the best temperatures, amazing ecosystem. It really is an amazing place.
As a tourist, it's amazing.
For tourists, it's perfect. It is the perfect place for tourists.
Yeah. Economy sucks. Awful politics. Like, you know, the lifestyle, a lot of the Italians, young kids don't like the lifestyle, the cigarette smoking, the afternoon naps, the general, like, slowness of the country. But if you're a tourist, it's definitely something worth doing. You'll always remember that trip. I wish it was more diverse. My sister's done the Bali and the Bora Bora and all that jazz, so you know, maybe she would say somewhere else. She would laugh at me if I said these three. So but hey, that's my best, man. Come on, do your best.
This has been Alex Veza on Thorcast telling you to get to Mexico, get to California, and not specifically Los Angeles, and then get to Italy and all of Italy, Southern, Central, and Northern. All right, Alex, thanks so much for coming out.
Thanks, Liam.
All right, have a good
incredible
one.
Appreciate it. You too.
If you enjoyed that last episode of the Thorcast, please go and subscribe on whatever streaming platform you're using. We can't make it happen without you. And this will also entitle you to updates on when new episodes arrive on the platform. Thanks so much.